and welcome to the Pinball Podcast. My name is Jeff, and I am here tonight with Don. Don, how are things going?
Going well.
All right, so I don't know what we're doing here. We just decided we'd jump into this pinball podcasting realm, and I think we got to be a little bit crazy, but there's a few podcasts out there that I really enjoy that have to do with pinball and game room related stuff, and I figured, you know, we had kind of a cool angle. Hopefully people agree with us on things. But Don, why don't we tell them how the two of us actually came to know each other? But before we get into that, why don't you tell me how you got into the hobby?
Sure. Yeah, as a kid, I was the kid who was always playing the pinball machines. And, you know, it was kind of a theme with my parents. They thought, you know, they bought me like the Sonic Spinball video games and whatnot, whatever pinball related stuff they could find. And so a couple of years ago, I asked my dad, hey, let's, how about we get a pinball machine, work on it together, have like a father-son project. He said, yeah, that'd be great. So I bought one, and then he didn't want anything to do with it. So I was stuck with a broken pinball machine and had to resort to looking to the internet to figure out how to play it. But by then, I'd been bit by the bug and was going to the bowling alley three times a week to play whatever they had on location. And before I knew it, I think at the most I've had is probably 24 machines at once. And I think right now I'm down to 13, so I'm in remission.
And what was that first machine?
The first machine was a Bally Odds and Evens. Oh, okay. It was the two-player version of Monte Carlo. I ended up selling it. I didn't have any emotional ties to it. But my wife and I, around that same time, we were constantly playing a roadshow, Red and Ted's roadshow at the bowling alley. So we finally chased down the owner and bought a legit machine maybe 2 months after I got that Odds and Evens. And we still have the roadshow. I don't see that one going anywhere.
Yeah, my experience is a little bit different. When I was the kid, I was actually the one always playing the arcade games. And my dad loved pinball. And whenever we'd go out to the mall or whatever and my mom wanted to shop, sometimes the two of us would tag along. And we'd go down to the basement arcade. He'd hand me a handful of quarters and he'd kind of glue himself into the row of pinballs in the back. And I would kind of go in between playing the arcade games and standing on the side of him watching him play games. And I liked pinball, but I just I was more of an arcade kid. But then one Christmas for the family, we got a Data East Simpsons pinball machine that had been on location for about 6 or 7 months, and when it was getting ready to be rotated out, my dad found out that, you know, the guy was just going to throw it into storage for a little while. So he bought it as a Christmas present, and from there I really started to love it. And so it was there in the house, and then when I moved out and got married, you know, many years later, my wife and I put together a MAME machine, but I really wanted a pinball machine. She loved the movie Jurassic Park, so I found a great deal on opportunity to pick up a Jurassic Park pinball machine. Once I got that in the house, it was all over. I've been picking them up right and left since then. And that one came with some issues, so I did have to learn to fix it. And I actually found out fixing them is quite a bit of fun. And I've been hooked ever since. Not sure what my high number is, but right now I'm sitting at 13 as well, I believe. So
nice.
Yeah.
I'm actually a terrible player, and I also found that I enjoy repairing them more than actually playing them. So, I love getting a bunch of beaters and fixing them up and making them play great.
Yeah, there's nothing like shopping out a pin or restoring a pin and seeing the difference of where they were when they got into your hands and then what you can get them back up to. I mean, many times they look just as good as new and sometimes play better than they did out of the box.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, Don, you and I met each other a little over a year ago. Well, it was about a year and a half ago. And it was out at the Rocky Mountain Pinball Showdown.
Mm-hmm. And up in Denver.
Yeah, up in Denver. It's a great show for anybody who hasn't been. It's worth checking out. It's one that's really focused on, I'd say, playing the machines more than the seminars and stuff. But they do have, you know, guests and such. The year that I went, it was Dennis Nordman and Greg Frères, and they were great.
Yeah, last year they had Jersey Jack and John Trudeau.
Yeah, so it's a good show. The weather's pretty unpredictable that time of year in Denver, but that's just part of the fun. And so basically, a couple of nights before the show, another local collector here who was planning on going on the show mentioned that he couldn't, but that he had sold, well, that he knew somebody who had sold a Judge Dredd, and I mentioned that I was going out to the show, and I had some extra room to take a pinball machine out there. And as it turned out, the machine was going to you, and somehow we talked a little bit on RGP right before the show. And anyway, I brought you the machine. It was a bit of an experience getting it between our two U-Hauls, and
in the mud and snow.
Yeah, there was some wild weather, and then finding an outlet to test it and fire it up.
It was a good time.
It was fun, and then we just kind of kept contact ever since then, and a few months later, just by coincidence, our vacations coincided down in Las Vegas, and we found each other in the Pinball Hall of Fame again, and so that was kind of funny.
Yeah.
But we both have wives who are supportive of our crazy hobbies.
More often than not, yeah.
Yeah, so anyway, we thought we'd do this show. We both love the hobby, obviously, and pretty involved in it. So hopefully people enjoy what we've got to say.
Mm-hmm.
And as we put these shows out, we're going to invite, you know, you guys who are listening to interact with us a little bit. We'd love to hear your stories. We'll tell you a little bit later kind of how you can get in touch with us. But let's talk some news. One of the kind of newest things to kind of come out in the rumor mill is that supposedly there's one more code update coming for Tron. And I don't own a Tron. Do you, Don?
No. My brand new pinball dollars were allocated elsewhere this year.
Oh, so, yeah.
As much as I would love one, I have been buying all the toys on clearance to mod one out someday.
Yeah. No. It's definitely a game I want to pick up. There's one on location by my house, so that's kind of made it easy to not have to run out and buy one. That limited edition looks awesome.
Yeah. I actually have seen the little neon lights. They're kind of doing light brights now this holiday season, but using that light bright cable, and I thought, you know, I should get one of those and try it on a pin.
Yeah, so nice looking machine. There haven't been a lot of, I'd say, complaints about the code or anything, but there are a few things that people are looking for and to kind of clean up some stuff in it. So the rumor is that an upcoming update's coming, but it's probably going to be the last update that it sees. So any major changes that come down will have to come in this update. But overall, people seem pretty happy with the software. I've enjoyed the game. I think they've done a really good job with it. It's probably, in my opinion, the best game that Stern's put out since Spider-Man.
Do you know, are they releasing separate ROM updates? Because the Daft Punk multi-ball on the LE...
You know, I don't know, but it seems like they would have to, since there is kind of a difference there in the feature.
Yeah.
But so we'll put it in the show notes if anything concrete comes out between now and the time the show goes live. But for now, it's rumored, but pretty safe bet that they probably are going to put one more update out. Another thing that's not quite as recent, but it's probably still worth talking about, is the pictures for Transformers have been leaking out. And what do you think about those, Don?
Yeah, they're everywhere. I actually read a little rundown of someone who had played the game. The pictures, I like that they stuck with the robot theme instead of the movie theme as much. Looks like they kind of a mixture of the newer robots and the 80s robots. Mm-hmm. No Shia LaBeouf on any of the slingshots or anything. I like that.
Yes.
The nut shot is a little weird. The Optimus Prime nut shot.
Yeah.
But, you know, George Gomez games, in my experience, I've never liked them when I approach the game, and then I can't stop playing them. So yeah. Even if the layout's a little funny to me, I'm not a big fan of the fan layout, but I just find myself coming back to his games again and again, so I have high hopes for it.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you on that. In fact, I own a Lord of the Rings. It's one of my favorite games, but when I first played that the first few times out in the wild, I didn't like the game. I thought, wow, it looks really nice, and it's got some cool toys on it with the Balrog and such, but I just never clicked with the machine. And I kind of picked one up just because it was kind of a deal that was too hard to pass up. It was included in a multiple buy, but you know, once I really got to playing it, I've learned to really, really love the game. And kind of the same with, yeah, some other George Gomez games, is the more I've played him, the more I've appreciated what he's done. And on the surface, Transformers looks like it's going to be a quick game, probably lots of combo shots. It looks like they've given him a little bit of a better budget to work with than we've seen recently out of Stern. So all signs point to it being a pretty much probably a the pinball machine that George Gomez would have wanted to make going into it.
Yeah, I'm hoping the software is deep and you know, something along the lines. Even Spider-Man, I thought the software was great, and somewhere in that range. I don't want it to be. The reason I say that is that the playfield kind of reminds me of No Fear, and that had no depth at all.
Yeah, I can see that for sure.
So. Yeah, we'll see. I'm optimistic, and I hope to play one before the year's out.
And I definitely agree with you. With it's nice. It's not plastered with the actors, and they've focused on the different machine robots.
The robots, machines. Yeah.
Machines is a little bit weird, but yeah, it looks nice. I like the different additions that they're doing, and it sounds like they're selling out of them already. As far as the productions of Stern, I mean, you'll find them with distributors for a while, but Stern has sold out their initial run of all of the limited stuff.
So. Yeah, I'm a bit mixed on that. It's like buying a machine with all the mods installed, whether you want them or not. So I guess I like that the option's there.
Yeah. So moving on from there and staying kind of on the Stern vibe for a minute. Stern put up a teaser on Facebook that quickly got pulled. I actually did comment on it, but it's gone now. But there's the image of it floating around, and basically all it was a little picture that had written on it Project Alice. And I don't know if there were any other images, but that's the only one I saw. Did you happen to catch any others?
The only one I saw was Lyman and Steve Ritchie sitting next to the Alice picture. I don't remember what the picture on the Facebook post was. But I do remember the Project Alice, and then as we researched it, we couldn't find it.
Yeah, so it seems that, and Stern's done that before, where they've put up pictures and taken them back down, or they've asked kind of cryptic questions on Facebook that at one point it sounded like maybe a Muppets machine was coming when they're asking, what's your favorite Muppet? Mm-hmm. But on this one, they pulled it so quickly, I have to think that maybe people got on to them a little bit too easily of what they were talking about, and it maybe cause them to back down a bit. But obviously the most popular opinion out there is that it's an Alice in Wonderland pinball machine. Others that people mention is it could be a Resident Evil tied one with an outside chance of Alice Cooper. I really don't see that.
No. Even Resident Evil, I wouldn't bet on. But the Alice in Wonderland movie's already passed, so.
It has. I mean, it's kind of an active license, but I don't know. I've not looked to see if there's any sort of follow-up films or anything in the works, but I guess you can look at it like Wizard of Oz, as it's kind of a timeless theme.
Yeah, if they have that Disney license, or I doubt they would go with the book license, but you never know. I'm sure you've seen the John Papaduke Alice playfield from years ago.
Yeah, and that looked like it had a lot of potential.
Yeah, that looked great. And I know for a short while there, they had thrown out a rumor about Toy Story.
I'd like to see that. I don't know how Alice would cross into Toy Story.
Oh.
But with Stern working with Disney again, it's possible they could have signed a multi-license deal. I do know that Steve Ritchie was working on a licensed game, and he was really excited about the license. So, trying to think of what would excite him, I kind of see him maybe getting a little bit excited about Alice in Wonderland just because there's so many weird and crazy things you could do in it.
Yeah, and I know they've mentioned that it's possible John Borg is working on Avengers. There's pictures of the Avengers above his desk on some of the different Facebook posts. And a lot of people seem to think AC/DC is next, and that's what Steve's excited about. I kind of don't see that happening.
Yeah, I'm on your side of that. I don't really see that. I mean, it's possible, but I don't know. After the Rolling Stones, it seems that one didn't perform too well. And I don't know. It's hard to say, but I don't see AC/DC as being the next Pin myself.
No. It would be an awesome fan project. Somebody did a one-off, but yeah, I can't see it mass-produced.
So, again, if any more information pops up about what that Project Alice might be, we'll report on that. But we definitely know Transformers is next, and there's quite a bit out there if you want to get out and see those pictures. Another thing that was kind of let slip a little while ago, and this was on the Spooky Pinball Podcast, Charlie does a great job producing that show, and he got an interview with Cassandra Peterson, also known as Elvira, and she said that she had been contacted with the possibility of doing a third pinball machine, and it sounds like it was coming out of the Jersey Jack camp.
Yeah, she said she'd talked to the same designers of her previous games. She loves working with those guys. And, of course, that's Dennis Nordman and Greg Ferris, who are working on Wizard of Oz right now.
Yep. And there's no way to know at this. I mean, she said it sounded like there were still in negotiations, hoping they could make it work. I'm guessing a lot of it has to do with how well Wizard of Oz performs when they begin shipping those. But to me, it sounds really close to being a done deal if she's already kind of talking about it. And I don't see why they wouldn't go with it. Both the Elvira pins out now have been insanely popular, and it seems like it's still a theme that people would get excited about.
And was CPR working on a Scared Stiff playfield right now? I know they just did the Party Monsters plastics not long ago.
I think they are. I think she said that in that interview as well, so...
It's cool she's still supporting the hobby, so I think it'd be exciting to get the team together again. Yeah, I've got a Party Monsters machine, and I love it.
Yeah, Rick from Planetary Pinball said that her license has been the easiest one for them to kind of go out and secure, that they've been really easy to work with, so they're definitely on board with doing more with pinball out of the Elvira side of things. So
I know everybody's excited to know the next Jersey Jack machine. And he said a couple of weeks ago that he has two more games in the works, and we know one is going to be unlicensed theme, the next one, but who knows on that third one.
Yeah, and supposedly over at Stern, there's a chance that Steve Ritchie might be able to do an original theme, but it's all going to depend on, you know, if the factors fall in place. But it sounds like he's got a really strong concept that he's ready to run with, and he feels like he's got a good shot at making it.
Yeah.
So, all right, so I guess enough of the rumor mill. So something that's kind of come out here in the last, you know, week or so is this independent film that's being made, and it's called Pinball Donut Girl. What do you know about that, Don?
I know Jane Wideland from the Go-Go's is involved, and I know it seems to be somewhat fictional mixed with a documentary or something, because they're asking for support and they're raising funds to actually create the film. But I know Gene Cunningham's warehouse was part of the filming locations.
Yeah, it sounds like it's a mixture of pinball and some relationship drama / humor. Really kind of a quirky type of project, but they're taking donations to help fund it right now. And we'll mention towards the end of the show where you can go to support them. But Don, they have a kind of a small teaser trailer out for it, but it doesn't say a whole lot because it sounds like they're still in pre-production on a lot of stuff. So
They're trying to get it going. It just says it's a comedy about two people who discover each other and themselves through a vintage pinball machine.
Yeah, it sounds like the when they say discover each other, it doesn't necessarily say it's a romantic comedy. Could just be two guys. Maybe it's our story, Don.
Well, it says about love and pinball.
Well, we love pinball.
We do love pinball, yeah.
So it sounds interesting. I mean, I chipped in a few bucks. I definitely want to see where it goes. And I love seeing all of these films popping up about pinball and the documentaries and stories about it. So it sounds like a more artistic take on things, so. Yeah. Worth supporting, in my opinion.
It looks like a lot of fun, yeah.
So, that's all I had for news. I don't know if you had anything else that was new or exciting, or even if it wasn't that new, you just wanted to talk about it.
No, I think that's a good stopping point for this week.
All right. And if people have news tips, feel free to send those in on our site. There's a contact form.
Oh.
And,
I did actually have one more thing I wanted to bring up. It's a new product, but it's something that I haven't actually dealt with. Have you seen the color DMDs?
Yes, I'm glad you mentioned that because I did want to talk about that. And that was on display at Pacific Pinball Expo.
Mm-hmm.
And
it just got priced as well.
Oh, it did. What's the price on that?
The price point is $399, okay. which is actually lower than I expected because they have to actually program each game.
It's a very time-intensive operation, it sounds like. So.
And they're trying to program at least 100 games by the end of the year.
Wow. That
sounds like a lot. Yeah.
We'll put links to that in the show notes. But for those that are unfamiliar, it's basically it replaces the DMD on your current pinball machine with one that displays the same graphics but colorized. And the one they've been showing is Attack from Mars. So rather than just all orange dots, you've got the aliens are green, you know, mm-hmm. the backgrounds are all colored, and it looks really, really nice. And looking at it, I almost would prefer that over, you know, a possible LCD screen replacement for the DMD. But if these guys are able to kind of get going with it, I think we'll see them, you know, like you said, over 100 machines. That's great. And that's actually a pretty reasonable cost for a brand new product.
Yeah, I honestly, I was thinking in the $600 range.
Mm-hmm.
And it's exciting. I like that they're able to do it for older games. It's not just, you know, Transformers is going to have a color DMD or something like that. But mm-hmm. It's actually the games that we already own, we already know we love getting this new spin. So I like that it's retrofitted.
Yeah, and the installation takes very little effort. It's almost just like replacing your DMD. So the first game, like I said, was Attack from Mars. Watching that got me all excited because I own a really nice Attack from Mars that I was able to pick up not too long ago, and it would just be icing on the cake for me to get that. So we'll link to that. That's a really cool project. I love seeing when people can come up with a really new innovative idea that still applies well to the older games.
Definitely.
Awesome. And that's just at colordmd.com, isn't it?
I believe so, yeah.
Okay. Well then, let's talk about upcoming events. The events are always fun. That's where you get out and you can generally get a chance to play the newest few machines that have come out and sometimes play those rare things that collectors only drag out once a year. And mm-hmm. The next one coming up, and that's going to be this weekend, and I believe the show will be up before that point, so it's the White Rose Game Room show, and I've never been to it, but I've always heard good things about it. What do you know about the show, Don?
It's typically called the York Show, and Pin Geek used to put out DVDs on every show. It was just this guy would go around and videotape every show, and so I've seen a couple of the York shows in there. It looked like it was a good place to sell a pin or buy a pin. It looked like there was a lot of trading and whatnot. Mm-hmm. Beyond it, I've never been, but I've always heard good things as well.
Yeah, and that's this weekend, which would be October 7th and 8th, and that is in York, Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're in the area or you somehow have the time, head on in there and check it out. The next week after that, we have Pinball Circus, and this is an event that always gets a lot of attention and love on RGP, partially because of who puts it on and partially because it sounds like it's just a dang good time. And it takes place at SS Billiards, which, as everyone knows, Lloyd Olson manages and owns. Mm-hmm. And it's in Hopkins, Minnesota. And it's more of a tournament, but it's also a lot of just hanging out, talking to guys, and playing pinball.
Yeah, it sounds like a lot of fun. I've always wanted to check out SS Billiards, and it looks like they got free play for most of the afternoon on Sunday, so it's something worth bringing the family to.
Yeah, and Lloyd's really well known for keeping his machines in perfect working order, keeping them clean, and he does a good job at getting the newer stuff in there. So,
mm-hmm.
Again, that's in Hopkins, Minnesota, next weekend, the 15th and 16th. If you can drop in, do so. I wish I had the time to hit up some of these Midwest shows. They have things going on constantly. But towards the end of the month, we have the kind of granddaddy of them all, and that's Pinball Expo. That one is the 19th through the 23rd, and this is a show you've been to before, right, Don?
Yeah, I went last year.
And what did you think?
I personally loved it. As a pinhead myself, I love the seminars. It was really interesting. I love getting to meet these guys that I had talked to on RGP or on different forums over the years. And you get to see these different machines, these one-offs that you've never, you know, you'd never see elsewhere. Some really rare games. The people I was with didn't enjoy it as much. There's not as many opportunities to actually stay and do free play. Most of the free play events are overnight.
Mm-hmm.
They'll start maybe 5 o'clock, through the next day. But they had, I guess they had a little over 100 machines, but everything from Aaron Spelling, which I think there's like three of them, to this really cool, white water with, snow capped mountains and an abominable snowman, like stuff you just don't see.
Yeah. And that's where you also see some of the craziest modded machines.
Mm-hmm.
There's just some famous machines in the past that have come out of that. But as far as, like you said, it's a really a show for the hardcore pinheads where they can go and meet the designers and artists. If you've got Translights that you want signed, that's the show to take it to, because most of them show up there. And if you really want to hear a lot of the backstories in pinball, I mean, you can get it from the guys themselves who made these things. And it is the home of pinball in the United States and there in Chicago.
Yeah, the Stern Factory Tour is kind of attached to it. You can, I think it's an extra $50 or something. You get to tour the factory, see where the pins are made, and, you know, shake Gary Stern's hand and whatnot. So it's actually really fun. Yeah. Another really cool event is the Pinball Life open house.
Yeah, I want to mention that. That coincides with Expo as well.
And you take a shuttle out there. It's about an hour away from the actual Expo. But that was maybe my favorite part of the whole weekend last year. There's free beer, free food, discounted parts, and a couple different tournaments they had running. It was a lot of fun.
I hear a lot of people say that that's the highlight of the trip for them. So I'm definitely planning on going next year. This year, it just doesn't quite line up for me. And so next year, I definitely want to get out there and get going and seeing what, you know, Pinball Expo is all about. And, you know, with all of the kind of resurgence in the new machines, with Jersey Jack getting his thing going and Stern kind of ramping things up, I think the show will see a little bit more life in it these next couple of years than maybe it has.
Mm-hmm.
So, go ahead.
I was going to say our next episode will probably be full of news from the show. I know, like, Greg Freres and Dennis are unveiling Project X. Whatever that means, if that's their next machine.
Their Whoa Nelly project has been pretty cool, the Big Juicy Melons.
Yeah, very cool. I got to play it last year at Expo. It was a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. And actually, at that Rocky Mountain Pinball Showdown, the one where you and I met, they were showing stuff off from there, from the kind of the early production of it, that was pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, that's the 19th through 23rd, later this month in Chicago, Illinois. And for those that don't know, it's actually really convenient because it's held in the hotel where you would most likely stay. So, all right, Don, let's talk about a featured machine this month. And we'll probably just do one per show. And this month we're going to talk a little bit about probably one of the machines that's kind of seen a growth in appreciation the last couple of years, and that is Judge Dredd. Mm-hmm. And you own one of these, and what can you say about it?
I'm a little biased. Judge Dredd is actually my favorite pinball machine.
Oh, see, I didn't know that.
Yeah. I love the theme. I love the DMD. I love the playfield. I love the cabinet art. There's nothing about the game I don't enjoy. It's really funny. It keeps the great sense of humor of the comics. Without the awful acting of the movie. It came out the year before the film did. A lot of people think thankfully it's based on the film, but it's not. It's based on the comic.
And that's the nice thing, is all the art is based on the comic.
Mm-hmm.
And for those that don't know, Judge Dredd, isn't he a British comic book character?
Yeah. What is it, 2000 AD or 2200 AD? Yeah, he's a British comic book character, and most of his comics were just one page. You know, he'd kind of go save somebody or stop a crime or whatever. But they were usually very, very full of humor and nods to different comics and whatnot.
Yeah. And You know, Judge Dredd is one of those machines that you can pick up at a pretty reasonable price for everything it packs into the game. And what would you say is the most notable feature on Judge Dredd as far as toys or you know, like ramp or shot or wherever it goes?
Of course, the big one is the dead world. There's a big spinning planet, looks kind of like Saturn, that the balls actually are loaded onto. In the original version, the balls fall off, but a very common mod is the dead world mod, where the planet actually carries the balls around and they stay locked. Then when multi-ball happens, there's a little magnetic crane that pulls the balls off of the planet. But more than that, I'm a big fan of Wireform, and there's a ton of Wireform on this game.
Yes, there is.
It's got 3 ramps, 4 flippers. It's a super pin, so it's extra wide. Mm-hmm. And it's actually got 2 launch buttons. The left launch is timed, it's like a missile launch. So you'll hit the launch button and it shoots straight up to the drop targets. When the correct drop target is lit, of course you hit it for the jackpot.
And I know it's also extra heavy from personally.
It is pretty heavy. It's got gold legs and it's got an awesome gold eagle topper.
It's one of the best toppers in pinball, I think.
Yeah, it's very, very cool.
So, is there anything as far as like a combo or a shot that you feel is kind of a big satisfying punch on the game that just really gets you every time you hit it, kind of excites you?
Well, the left ramp loops all the way around back to the right flipper, so you can keep hitting that shot. But something that a lot of people overlook is the question mark target. The question mark target is located on the lower left center of the playfield, and it's a little difficult to hit because it's so far out on the right flipper. I mean, you really have to get right on the tip of the flipper, but it'll actually end modes. It'll add bonuses or add different units to the modes while you're playing. So instead of hitting a ramp, you'd hit that and it adds to it. There's also on the opposite edge is the very tip of the left flipper leads to a 3 captive balls, which are the meltdown targets.
Mm-hmm.
So you hit, it's kind of like a Newton's cradle thing. You hit one ball, which hits another ball, which hits another ball, which hits the target. Yeah, it's a really cool shot. It's very difficult to hit.
And when you hit that solid, it's such a cool effect. The smack, smack, smack.
Uh-huh.
It's pretty cool.
It doesn't happen often, so it's great when it does.
So, well, great. What would you say is a good price to pay for one of these? Let's kind of run the conditions. Say a project machine, what would you say is a fair deal for one of these?
I would guess projects run 700, 7 to 8.
Mm-hmm.
In good shape, all the way up to maybe 13, 14.
And then,
No?
No, I say, and then in something like in collector's condition, probably high 1,800 to 2,200 or so.
I was going to say 18, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's definitely one of the more economical machines, and it's just provides quite a bit as far as shot variety goes. And mm-hmm. like I said, some of the features aren't really cool. That dead world is one of the coolest looking things in the dark when mm-hmm. it's going, especially with the mod. Really, really cool. It's not a machine I've owned. The one that I brought out to you, I had at my house for a couple of days, but I held off from playing it. Luckily, I got a chance to play a different one later, but it is one I enjoy quite a bit and probably one I'd pick up if the right deal came along. I haven't seen one for sale locally since that one that went your direction. So
I think people are becoming more interested in it lately because it's got really unique shots. It's got a lot of depth. I think there's 9 modes. Plus the Super Game, correct me if I'm wrong, I think it's the only game that features Super Game, which is actually constant multi-ball. You pay $2, I guess, for a play, but it'll constantly shoot out 2 balls, and the modes are actually different. So it'll say, like, in the mode, he'll say there's a traffic jam, so it'll shoot out all 6 balls, and there's just traffic all over the play field. Or maybe there'll be a prison break, and there's prisoners all over the field, so it'll shoot 6 balls out again.
Yeah, really that cool. Super Game is a really, really cool feature. I wish that had gotten used a lot more. Yeah. So, well, great. Judge Dredd. They're not too hard to find. There seems to be quite a few of them floating around, but lately people have been holding on to them a little bit more. As I mentioned earlier, it's becoming a lot more of an appreciated game. So if you have a chance to pick one up and you're unsure, it's a pretty safe recommendation in my mind. As far as games go, so
I should note that it's not really family friendly. It's pretty strong PG, PG-13. There's, you know, a lot of violence on the DMD.
Yeah, Judge Dredd, the character's kind of a brutal character.
Yeah, he'll shoot first, ask questions later type. Yeah. So just a heads up if you have small children.
Kind of like Batman without the morals of killing.
Yeah, exactly. So,
but yeah, it's a great game. So the other thing is we wanted to feature, along with an actual machine, a virtual table. And you've got one for us, Don. Why don't you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I enjoy virtual pinball as well. And, of course, it's a totally different feel. But I wanted to talk about High Speed for the NES. It's sort of a port or an emulation of the actual High Speed table, the Steve Ritchie classic, that actually I've never played. As many of those are in existence, I've never played a High Speed.
Oh, wow.
But the table is really weird. So I put it in my NES, I start playing, and then all of a sudden a tumbleweed rolls across the playfield. Like, okay, that's odd. So I keep playing, and then a helicopter picks up my ball and takes it off the table and leaves it there for like a lock. And then there's an oil slick on the playfield. It's a really weird version, but it adds some kind of cool stuff. I couldn't stop playing it because it was just so bizarre. I thought it was just going to be a straight up port of the pinball machine.
Yeah, and there's two philosophies with the digital pinball games is. You either try and get them as accurate as possible and try and recreate that feel, or you can just totally take a left turn and, like you said, do some of that weird, random stuff. And I do remember High Speed for being kind of out there with that. And Pinbot wasn't so, you know, strange and weird on the NES. But yeah. But yeah, High Speed, they took some liberties with it. And it definitely makes for a stronger game, I think.
The ball even ends up in two little mini playfields.
Yeah.
That don't exist in the game. So it's pretty cool. Jeff was mentioning earlier that you could find it emulated. I actually got a copy off Guzex. It was 100 points, which is the equivalent of $5. And I've seen it constantly at the retro game shops around town.
Yep, I picked mine up for $1.
There you go. Yeah, definitely worth checking out for $1.
So, yeah, if you don't have an NES, it might cost you $15, $20 to get one. But the game itself isn't going to cost you anything more than to add to it, so worth checking out if you're a big fan of pinball and you're not turned off by the digital pinball. And I hope you're not, because a lot of them, they are really good, they can do some things that obviously you can't do with a physical ball. Mm-hmm. And so
plus they always play perfectly.
Yeah, they don't break.
You never have to shop them.
Yep. They won't eat your quarters. So. Mm-hmm. Great. We'll have another table next show, and we'll have another machine next show. If you have stuff that you want featured, feel free to send in suggestions. If we don't get them, otherwise it's gonna be whatever we want, dang it.
That's so right. How did you pick Judge Dredd? You just put it in a random
I went to IPDB, everybody's favorite pinball resource site there, and I put one letter in and hit search and kind of just scrolled around with my mouse, and wherever my pointer stopped, it came up to Judge Dredd. So
there you go.
Hopefully I don't have to do that next time, plan things out a little bit better. But
no, I like it. That was fun. It was odd that you picked my favorite game. I'm not just saying that because that's what you picked. That really is my favorite pin.
Yeah. It was funny. If you go to KLOV.com and they do a featured pinball, I mean not pinball, an arcade machine, mm-hmm. Randomly when you load up the page. And the other day I was going to go buy a championship sprint arcade game, and I went over there to see the dimensions of it real quick, make mm-hmm. sure it was going to fit in the back of my car. And when I went to it, that was the game that pulled up. Kind of weirded me out for a second. Yeah. So.
It's a sign saying yes.
Like, yes, I need to go buy this game.
Yes.
So, I mean, I'll take anything as a sign when it comes to that. But
pretty much.
All right. Well, there's another thing I want to do in each show is where people can definitely help us out with this one. But I'd like to talk about one place per show where people can go play pinball in the wild. I know most people listening are going to be collectors, or they're at least going to know where they can play, but a lot of times there's kind of those hidden gems scattered around town. The one I want to mention is pretty well known locally, but it actually gets passed over a lot because it's in a nickel arcade, and it's called Nickel Mania, and this is in Salt Lake City, Utah. But there's a bunch of arcades around called Nickelcade, and same concept, except for there's a major difference in the maintenance of machines. In the Nickelcades, you usually have one or two pinball machines, but they're hammered, as well as all the arcade machines. In Nickel Mania, it's actually a collector that owns the place, and one of the guys that he has helping him manage it is also a major collector. And so they have a lot of really high quality classic arcade games, and his pinball row is usually about 12 pinball machines long. So a lot of machines there. He does a good job of rotating in and out the machines. At my last time I visited, he had like Revenge from Mars, Simpsons Pinball Party, Adam's Family, The Getaway. Jeez, I'm kind of blanking.
It's a solid
here.
Collection.
But I mean, he's had like some things as rare as say like a Space Invaders out there, and that's a pretty cool thing to see in person if you haven't seen that Infinity back glass that it's got. Up to, like I said, some of the newer Stern stuff, and some of the stuff you don't see too often, like Junkyard is out there right now. And it's usually in pretty good shape. Every once in a while, a machine will go down for the count, but that's to be expected. Unfortunately, last time I was out there, Black Knight was not working, but he does a good job of keeping them in working order and as clean as can be expected for locations. So for those that are in the Utah area, if you're passing by, maybe you're visiting, a lot of people come in the winter to ski, and I'll see on forums people asking if there's anywhere to play in the area. Nickel Mania is the name of the place, and he actually has two locations. His secondary location's a bit further south and out west of the Salt Lake Valley, but that one only has about 5 to 7 machines on average. But I'll put the address in the show notes. It's called Nickel Mania. Pretty great place. You pay $2 to get in, and then pinball machines are either 2 or 3 nickels, depending on the machine.
That's a great value.
Yeah, you go in there, and with $5, you'll play until your fingers are sore. A lot of fun. I'll drop by once in a while on a Saturday and spend an hour or two playing, and I'll walk out, and I'll still have nickels left over in my pocket. It's a good time. So, people out there, if you have a place that you'd like to share, let us know. And even if you're an operator and you're listening, we definitely want to know where people can go find your machines and kind of support your stuff. So if you're going to send in a report, kind of just give a few ideas of what can be expected if they go to the place. And, you know, if there's specifically, you know, the machines that are out there right now, mention them, what kind of condition they can expect. And what Don and I talked about doing is setting up a map. And as we get the suggestions coming in, we'll put together a map of where people can go play, and we'll keep that updated. So,
and be sure to mention the hours. I can't tell you how many times I've gone across town to check out a game and find out they're closed on Mondays or whatever.
Yes, and
personal frustration.
I will definitely post the hours to Nickel Mania. I believe they're open every day of the week. They open later on weekdays, and they obviously stay open later on weekends. So I'll post their hours as well as the location. So
cool.
Very, very good to put that in there as well. So that's this show's location and report. But one other feature I want to talk to, Don, and this is one that can drive pinball owners crazy, is there's always some sort of an issue with a machine. And you know, programmers have a term, what they call the ghost in the machine, when they just, something's wrong and they can never chase it down or hunt it. And pinball, it seems like if you own a decent sized collection, there's always going to be a problem that you're struggling with. And
very true.
And do you happen to have anything that's just kind of been eating at you and you've either been struggling to figure out or it just keeps going wrong?
Yeah, I've got two, and I've actually, they're things I've talked about on RGP months ago because they're persistent problems. I'm lucky enough to own 4 of the super pins of the 7 made, so I can kind of swap boards around. In my road show, the right flipper will just start to stick, or the solenoid, it'll be just a split second, it'll kind of hang there, and then as you play more and more, it'll hang there for 2 seconds, 3 seconds. It seems to be the longer you hold the button, the longer the flipper will stay up beyond when you let go of the button. It'll just bzzz and then fall.
Wow.
So I've swapped pretty much every board in the machine with another game. And the problem doesn't go from the right flipper to the left flipper. I tried swapping the flipper optos. It doesn't go from machine to machine, so I don't know where to begin on that.
I have no idea. I can't help you now. you know, there's probably a few collectors out there that have quite a few of the super pins. It'd be nice if somebody knows and they could chime in.
Yeah. I'm pretty poor at board work, or I should say I'm gun shy. So I've been working more on board work, but right now I'm fortunate to just be able to swap whole boards. I know that won't always be the case, or that could get expensive. And the last one I have is that my World Cup soccer, the center skill shot, there's basically a coin toss.
Yeah.
And the center opto doesn't seem to register. But when I pull the machine out and I put, you know, those big brackets that kind of hold the play field up when you slide the play field out, when that bracket's grounded, the opto works fine. So it sounds like a grounding issue, but I've looked all over in that machine. I can't find any bad grounds.
Weird.
Yeah, so there's the ghost in that machine.
I had an issue on my World Cup where it was the middle light would work when I had the glass off. As soon as I'd throw the glass on and put that lock bar back on, that stupid light wouldn't work anymore.
Yeah.
Oh, it made me so mad. I took the thing out, reflowed everything, and eventually it went away, but it did that for a long time until it finally just cleared itself up, and oh, I was going crazy. It was making me so mad.
Yeah.
But, well, if anyone has any ideas on either of those things, we'd appreciate a shout out. You can use our contact form on our site, and I'll throw mine out there. And this one, I've gone to Pinside, I've gone to RGP, I've gone to the Clav forums, the BYOC forums, Pinball Bash. I've been everywhere, and I just cannot figure it out. It's my Lord of the Rings. And when I plunge the ball manually, it comes out real weak. And with Lord of the Rings, if you pull it back with full power plunge, it's supposed to go up around the orbit and come down towards your left flipper.
Mm-hmm.
Mine generally won't make it. It almost always falls in to the tower, which is a skill shot, so it's...
Why are you complaining?
Yeah, it's semi-fortunate, except for that everyone always thinks they're a champ for getting the skill shot for pulling the plunger back all the way.
Oh.
But the problem that comes up is it's weak with the auto kicker as well. And so sometimes when multi-ball kicks up, it'll kick a ball out, and the ball won't even make it out of the shooter lane. And then you end up having the problem where you have two balls in the shooter lane at the same time. So you're trying to play multi-ball, and you're having to try and manually plunge the balls and get them out yourself. Now, I've done everything. I've made sure that it's not rattling in the shooter lane that's causing the ball to slow down. I've made sure that there's nothing out of alignment. It's the shooter rod is the right size. I've... You know, the tip is good on the shooter rod, the right strength spring. I've even tried going to a stronger spring to compensate for it, and it's the same issue. I've tried everything. I've changed the entire shooter housing on it.
Wow.
No change. And then with the auto plunger, I've changed the coil. I've, obviously broken it down and cleaned the whole thing out. And it's just not an issue of power, because it feels like it's just hitting hard. I've made sure my play field's at the right tilt. I've many times sat there and looked at it. Now, one suggestion someone gave me on RGP was to record it with a video and watch it over and over at a slower speed. I actually did do that, and it looks like it's releasing just fine. So if anybody has any other ideas, I'd love to hear it. This is the only lingering issue with my Lord of the Rings that came to me plagued with problems. It's the one thing I can't figure it out, and it's the one thing that keeps it from being a 100% perfect machine. So I'd love to hear it. And if any of you guys out there have some, let us know. We'd love to help out. Hopefully a few of them will just be able to answer as it comes in, but I'm guessing most submissions we get are going to be pretty weird.
Yeah, most of the issues I've ever had, I can solve with a quick Google search. So we don't want the everyday problems.
Yeah, I don't want where my machine turns off when I press both flipper buttons.
Yeah, no.
So, yeah, if it's something that you've searched and you just can't find an answer to, let us know. Or if it's something I said that you know you've fixed properly and it keeps reoccurring, maybe there's another issue that we can help you hunt down. So those problems will drive you nuts, man.
Yes, sir.
I've had to step away from the Lord of the Rings and just accept it for now. And every about once a month, I'll get real kind of aggressive with it and like, all right, I'm going to try this, and I'll spend an hour on it and leave frustrated because it won't fix.
I actually ran a tournament on my World Cup soccer, and I just put a post-it note on it and said, skill shot broken, so it's an even playing field for everybody.
Yeah.
Nobody can get the three lights.
Yeah, you just kind of have to do that sometimes.
Yeah.
So, well, I also wanted to take a look at a newer product. I mean, it's not brand new or anything, but it's at the snail's pace, sometimes product launches move in pinball. It's one of the newer things we have, and it's the color-changing LEDs, and they were around for a while, and then they seemed to kind of go away. Now they're back again, really kind of popular thanks to companies like Cointaker and Pinball Life. Mm-hmm. And you've got a handful of those that you've put into some machines, so why don't you kind of give us your thoughts on those color-changing LEDs, and let us know which ones you're using.
Sure. I think all of my LEDs come from Cointaker. I've tried other companies, and in my personal experience, I haven't had good experiences. But Cointaker stuff I've never had a problem with. In my World Cup soccer, I had a slow-changing color changer on the TV insert, the TV screenshot. Mm-hmm. Thought that'd be kind of cool, and it was just too slow. That's such a fast game that by the time you get back over there, you know, the average player probably wouldn't notice what color it was. So I put in a quick color changer, and it's awesome. It looks like a little flickering TV. Like, that's the effect, and that's exactly what I wanted. Awesome. It's great. It probably changes colors maybe twice a second or so. The slower ones maybe once a second, and they kind of, you know, grow brighter and then dim down. I actually have used slow changing ones on the diamonds in my Congo. There's maybe 6 diamond shots, I guess. Right. And I like it. It's effective. They're not clear inserts. They're like a milky white. So it's not the big boom flash. I guess another thing with my Congo is I have all super brights, not just typical LEDs. So that game is really bright. But I do like the color change. It's something a lot of people comment on. They're like, oh, do I go for the red crystal or the blue one? It's like, no, give it a second. It'll change.
So what do you think of Morel? I mean, average price on them is between $4 and $5, depending on how many you're buying, where you're buying them from. But yeah, they're about $4.50 on average. So what do you think of them? Are they a good value?
I think as an accent piece, yes. Your average mod for, let's say, Twilight Zone is $40 up to $200 for a little toy. So I think for $4, they are a good value. I've seen EMs with color changers, and I thought they looked terrible in my experience. It is kind of a cool effect, but not when you're trying to play.
Yeah, it's kind of one of those things where you just got to be kind of wise knowing where to put them.
Yeah, but as an accent piece, they're great.
Yeah, and I mean, there's probably even certain situations where they could look decent in a back box or, you know, in the right insert. So
mm-hmm.
Well, I kind of wanted to as a way of thanking people for listening to us each time, is we're going to do a contest each show, and this month figured we would give out some of these color-changing LEDs. And so we'll give out 5 of them to one listener who, it's pretty simple. All you have to do is like us on Facebook. And you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/pinballpodcast. It's that easy. And we do have a website as well, and it is thepinballpodcast.com. So the website's thepinballpodcast.com, but on Facebook, it's just facebook.com/pinballpodcast. Like us, feel free to leave us some comments, but we'll just take one random person who liked the page between now and the next show, and they'll win 5 free color-changing LEDs. They can choose if they want them from Pinball Life or Cointaker. It's really up to them.
Great.
And we'll hand those out. So. Well, great. I would personally like to pick up a few myself. I have some machines where I think there's a couple spots they'd look good. So, well, let's run through a few housekeeping items. We mentioned the Pinball Donut Girl film a little bit earlier,
mm-hmm.
and that is something that you are able to donate to if you want to help fund the project. Basically, the more funding they get, the higher production value it's going to have in the end. And do you have any information on where they can go to donate on that?
The site is called Indiegogo, IndieGogo.com. You can actually just search pinball on that site, and I think 3 things come up. It's pretty obvious which one it is. Indiegogo, or their website, of course, is pinballdonutgirl.com. And I should mention they spell donut D-O-N-U-T.
Right. The Simpsons way of spelling donuts.
Right.
So I'll also put a link in the show notes. Also, as I mentioned, the website for the podcast, and you probably found the website if you were downloading us, but it's just thepinballpodcast.com. Feel free to comment there on the post where the show goes up. We'd love to hear from you. We have a contact form there, and that's how we're probably going to have most of the time people will, you know, reply to our questions and stuff that we throw out. And it's just in the there's kind of a header image, and right above that on the left-hand side, there's a little contact us button. It'll take you to a form. Feel free to send us anything you'd like, and we'll definitely like to read reactions and stuff on the show, and any of the features that we do, this is how you'll respond to us. So that's thepinballpodcast.com, and there's also the RSS feed link for subscribing to the show. We'll get up on iTunes, Zune, and all sorts of other, you know, pod feeding sites out there. All
right.
Is there anything else you can think of? I know you've got a pinball group that's worth mentioning, so why don't you let them know what Duke City Pinball is all about?
Sure. I started a group here in the Albuquerque area called Duke City Pinball. You can find us at DukeCityPinball.com or on Facebook. And it's actually grown quite a bit the last 6 months or so. There's about 60 users right now. I've had it for 2-3 years, and for a long time it was just the four of us meeting together, but... the last couple times, there's been about 50 folks, and we'll do tournaments. We've been selling machines, trading machines. We want to get some little repair classes together. And we put together a map on Google Maps that has all the local pins on location. So Albuquerque area, Santa Fe. So if you're visiting, check it out. There's a couple pins around town worth checking out. And if you live locally... then come join us for our next pinball open house.
Sounds great. I'm not going to get into it now, but if you've seen it floating around in the forums, this coinopshippers.com, I'm actually the one that's running that. I don't know if you've come across that at all, Don, but basically I'll save it for another time, and I haven't really advertised this yet, but it's just a way for getting shipping set up for people for pinball and arcade machines. We're coming in a lot cheaper than going straight to North American Van Lines or STI or whatever you might be using. Just today we shipped a pin from it was Southern California. I can't remember exactly what city. It might have been San Diego to Maryland for $278. I mean,
wow,
that's mega cheap. But that's just in full disclosure, the coinopshippers.com guy, that's me. I'm not the actual freight company or shipper. I've just made an agreement to them that any leads I bring in, they'll give me their pretty much lowest rate possible on it. So if you go fill out the form, I'll take care of you. And I just put you in contact with the shippers once I've secured your quote. So it's kind of like a middleman thing. I don't really get much out of it, but it's kind of fun seeing where all the machines are going. Is in full disclosure, as I was mentioning, is I do marketing for the company in my 9-to-5 job. They're one of my marketing clients, so it keeps them happy that I keep sending work their way, and it helps the hobby. I mean, a lot cheaper shipping. We pretty much can go anywhere across the U.S. for, in most cases, under $300, and once in a while peak over $300, but we've never seen anything above, say, like $320, $330. So
check it out
cool. If you're interested. So, and it's insurance included on shipments, so it's pretty good.
That's great.
The one thing is the game does have to be on a pallet. Can't ship with legs on, since they're freight companies, not movers. So it is the safest way to ship, but I'll talk a little bit more about that directly in the forums, just because people have been really asking me lately what it's all about, and I didn't want to hijack the show to do that. But
no, it sounds like a cool resource. A lot of people are scared to ship a game, myself included. So
yeah,
sounds like you take out the headache. So very good.
So, so that's me on that. But if you guys have things going on that you want us to maybe highlight and talk about, let us know. If it's a fit for the show, we can work it in. Again, feel free to contact us there on thepinballpodcast.com. And thank you guys for listening. Subscribe, like us on Facebook. If you can, review us on any site that allows you to review us. It helps us out. Anything that you have left to say, Don, or...
No, and covered all. Get out there and play pinball.
All right, guys. Thanks for listening. This is the first show. We'll be back with another one. And hopefully, we'll get better each time. But I have a lot of fun. So thanks for listening, guys.